Well, I know it's a little bit unusual to have two people up here speaking, but this is a marriage seminar, and we are married. So, you know, we kind of thought that, you know, a marriage consists of a husband and a wife, and so we thought maybe we could present something together. Now, don't be afraid, we're not planning to preach. We're not even really planning to teach. This is more of a story set time. We're going to tell some stories about our marriage, some stories that hopefully will affect your marriage as well. We'll take turns kind of going back and forth as the topics require. Now, I'd like to start out by telling one particular story. It's not a story that I made up. It's an old one, probably about 2,500 years old, as far as I've been able to find out. And it was originally told in India long, long time ago. It's been told many, many times since in different ways, but it's a story I think that has lasted because I think it has a message that applies to many things, but particularly in this case, I want to apply it to the relationship with a husband and wife and how to be a good husband and wife. So this is the story. There were once six blind men who stood by the roadside every day and begged from the people who passed. They had often heard of elephants, but they'd never seen one. For being blind, how could they? It so happened that one morning, an elephant was being driven down the road where they stood. When they were told that the great beast was before them, they asked the driver to let him stop so that they might see him. Well, of course, they couldn't see him because they were blind, right? But they thought that by touching him, they could learn just what kind of animal he was.
The first man happened to put his hand on the elephant's side. "Well, well," he said, "now I know all about this beast. He's exactly like a wall."
The second one only felt the elephant's tusk. "My brother," he said, "you are mistaken. He's not at all like a wall. He's round and he's smooth and sharp. He's more like a spear than anything else."
The third happened to take hold of the elephant's trunk. "Both of you are wrong," he said. "Anybody who knows anything can see that this elephant is like a snake."
The fourth reached out his arms and grasped one of the elephant's legs. "Oh, how blind you are," he said. "It's very plain to me to see that an elephant is round and tall like a tree."
The fifth was a very tall man, and he chanced to take hold of the elephant's ear. "The blindest man ought to know that this beast is not like any of the things that you named," he said. "He's exactly like a huge fan."
Now, the sixth man was very blind indeed, and it was some time before he could even find the elephant at all. At last, he seized on the animal's tail. "Oh, foolish fellows," he cried, "you surely have lost your senses. This elephant's not like a wall, or a spear, or a snake, or a tree. He's like a, or even like a fan. But any man with the slightest sense can see that he's exactly like a rope."
And then the elephant moved on, and the six blind men sat by that roadside all day and quarreled about him. Each believed that he knew just how the animal looked, and each called the other hard names because they didn't agree with him.
So, how does this tale relate to that exotic creature that we call marriage? Right? How do we understand the elephant? First thing to understand that the elephant does exist. It is a thing, right? Marriage does exist. It is part of God's creation. The elephant doesn't change its nature because of who's experiencing it. Their blindness, or more precisely, lack of understanding, doesn't change what reality is. The second thing to understand is that you and your wife come to marriage like blind men, each discovering different aspects of that elephant. We have different perspectives. We have different expectations as we come into marriage.
Now, you might have noticed that each of the blind men did describe the elephant truthfully, but incompletely. They weren't wrong as far as their knowledge went, but they were wrong in assuming that their knowledge was complete. Likewise, each of us experiences God's gift of marriage with a different but quite limited understanding.
So if you approach your marriage like you already know everything about how it works, how your spouse should think and behave, you'll end up like the blind men, sitting by the side of the road, ever arguing, and never really discovering the majesty of what God has created. The blind men in this story told each other what they'd observed, but none respected the other enough to listen to what the other men said. They didn't consider what they didn't feel themselves. They didn't really communicate with each other. In order to fully understand the mystery of marriage, like the mystery of this elephant, you as a couple need to communicate. You need to listen. Only then will you fully discover the richness of what God has created for your relationship.
So our next stories are going to be about what we've discovered from exploring the elephant called marriage over the last 42 years. We got married when we were pretty young. I hadn't had my 21st birthday yet, and Brett had just turned 19. We were madly in love, of course, but we were also wildly unprepared for marriage. But I think that over the years, we've developed pretty good communication skills, at least enough to think that we've learned a few things that have helped our relationship, and we're hoping that they might be beneficial to your marriages as well.
Well, one of the first things that we should probably define is, what is a marriage? We know that God intended for it to be a lifelong union, a lifelong commitment between one man and one woman. In Mark chapter 10, it says, "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh, so they are no more twain, but one flesh." You notice that the scripture here only mentions that there are two people in this union. They're leaving the other ones. This means that your parents are not part of your marriage. Doesn't mean it's wrong to go to them for advice. Sometimes they've experienced a number of things that maybe they can share with you, give you advice on. But if you put your parents in the middle of that marriage, you can do a lot of damage, right? They do have wisdom from their own feeling of their own elephant that they can share with you. But so seeking advice can be helpful.
Yeah, so here's a good example. When we were looking at buying our first home, we took my father along with us so he could look for potential problems that we might miss. He went up to the attic, and he came back down to report, "There are so many holes in that roof up there, it looks like a planetarium." And since we didn't have the money to put a new roof on the house right away, we passed up that house, and we avoided a big financial strain. And that was a time when wisdom really paid off.
Yes. If you experience problems in your relationship, that really needs to stay between the two of you. Exception being, of course, if you really need to have some kind of a counselor involved with a serious problem. But if wife runs home to mother to spill about the latest argument that you've had, or I run home to my family and tell them about the pain maybe that I'm experiencing in my marriage, it can damage the sanctity of that relationship. The relationship is just you. It destroys the lines of trust and communication in your marriage when you spread those things out other than between the two of you. And it can put your mom or your dad in the middle of your marriage. They'll have a natural tendency to take the side of their child. And even when you and your wife reconcile and work it out, mom's gonna remember that. And she's going to have an opinion of your spouse that maybe you've resolved, but they haven't been able to.
Right before we got married, my dad took me aside and told me he wanted me to give back my house key. He explained that if Brett and I had problems after we said I do, I was not welcome to run home to cry on their shoulders or to ask for sympathy. It seemed kind of harsh to me at the time. I was a little taken aback. But looking back, I appreciated the point he was trying to make. Even though he wasn't a Christian, he understood the biblical concept that leaving your father and mother meant that you were joined to your new companion.
One other thing, when we were planning to get married, we, you know, of course, we were quite young, quite poor. When Lori and I were dating, one of our early schemes that to figure out how we could get married was, we were going to rent my bedroom from my mom after we got married. That would be the way we could afford to do this. We couldn't see how we could ever afford otherwise, and we were so in love, right? What a great idea, right? Rent in my parents' house. Fortunately, we didn't walk stars and eyes into that disastrous situation. Actually, when Lori's grandmother got wind of our plan, she took her aside and strongly advised against it. Thankfully, we abandoned that plan, and by the time we actually got married, we got a cute little apartment far enough away from our parents where we could actually be on our own. Make sure that you don't have just more than you and your wife in your relationship.
But we've been hearing about how a marriage needs a sound foundation in order to stand the test of time. Our relationship was based first on friendship and second on romantic love. This might not be the case for everyone, but we were best friends before we fell in love, or rather, I should say, grew into love.
That was very important, yeah. Because we were used to sharing our thoughts and feelings, we had a firm base of trust and caring on which to build the romantic side of our relationship. Romantic gestures such as candy and flowers or going out to dinner or a weekend getaway, like this one, are really nice, and they're a nice bonus in your life, but they won't really have a lasting impact on your marriage if the day-to-day relationship is lacking. It's hard to experience romance with somebody you don't know, or maybe somebody you don't even like. We believe that spouses are meant to be best friends.
Back when we were dating, the church that we were attending didn't have any kind of engagement or premarital counseling or anything like that. So we read a lot of books on marriage together on our dates, and we would go through and answer the questions at the end of the book, and we had a lot of good discussions that were sparked from that. We knew what we didn't want, and namely, that was a marriage like those of our parents. My parents had this thing that I call a Cold War marriage, in which they shared a last name and a roof over their heads, but not a whole lot else. They didn't share any common interests or hobbies, and they didn't even have a similar vision for their future. And I remember that my father once bragged that he and my mother had never had a fight, and I remember thinking, maybe you should have.
I thought that my parents had a fine relationship when I was growing up, until the day they announced they were separating. Since then, I've been told that my father also never knew that they didn't have a good relationship. He was clueless. He assumed that if mom didn't complain, that everything was fine. For mom, however, the relationship had died years earlier.
So Brett and I had to spend quite a bit of time brainstorming exactly what makes our relationship work, and we came up with the following. One of the things that first attracted me to Brett were his listening skills. I was just coming out of a verbally and emotionally abusive relationship that I had been in for a couple of years, and I needed a listening ear. Now remember, he was just my friend at this point. He was sympathetic and non-judgmental, and he just let me dump on him. So when you listen, remember to pay attention. It's not the same thing. Paying attention and listening are not the same thing. Nothing is more hurtful than spilling out your heart to your spouse only to notice that their eyes are glazing over with boredom. If you don't want your spouse to find someone else to confide in, pay attention.
I was just happy that she was talking to me, so. Never treat her daily experiences or thoughts as uninteresting or trivial. Ask her about her day went. Pay attention. Sometimes listening, for guys, is really just filtering out for the moments when you're supposed to grunt a response. Guys, listen for what's not being said. Oftentimes, much more is meant than the words she's using. Showing disinterest is a direct assault on her worth and is one of the most hurtful things you can do. You are not more important than she is. Create a safe atmosphere for sharing. Your spouse has to know that you accept them as they are, faults and all. If they're afraid of being criticized at every turn, they'll soon stop confiding in you and find somebody else.
And over the years, Brett's learned not to offer solutions to a problem that I'm telling him about unless I ask him to. He knows if he lets me talk long enough, I'll probably figure out a solution on my own. It even took me a while to realize I wasn't asking him to solve my problems. I just wanted to hear my thoughts expressed verbally. if I need to bounce an idea off of him, then I do, and he'll give me his opinion.
Men tend to be afraid of conversation. We might struggle to express our own feelings, or might be fearful of saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. Ask me how I know. It might be difficult to put our thoughts and feelings into words, but it's necessary if we want our wives to have insight into our minds and our lives. Practice makes perfect. She starts simply, guys, just by really listening to her. Not just hear the sounds that she's making. Like she said, she may not be looking for a solution to every problem she brings to you. She just may want someone to share her thoughts with. Coming up with a solution can sound to her like just a way to shut her up. Don't do that. Also, your spouse needs to know that you'll never share their secret thoughts with anyone else. If this trust is broken, it can be very difficult to rebuild.
Take an interest in each other's hobbies and pastimes. One way that I experience Brett's love is when he shows an interest in my hobbies. This is hard to believe, but going to a quilt show is not really his idea of a good time.
Go figure.
But he goes, and he shows an interest, and he's even learned some of the quilting terminology. And I feel closer with him because he's made that effort to share those things with me. Now, back when we were dating, he had an electronics hobby, and so I learned some of the basic electronics terminology, and at one time I could identify diodes, transistors, and capacitors, and he even taught me how to do a little bit of soldering. It was not at the top of my things I wanted to learn list, but it was important to him, and I wanted to share that part of his life.
We've heard already how God is the creator of us. God is the creator of marriage. And we also are made in his image. Because of this, God has given all of us a creative impulse. For us men, builders build, right? Farmers grow crops, right? Engineers design. This fulfillment of our created urge is more than just self-satisfaction. It's part of what God made us to be. Our wives also deserve that ability to have a creative outlet. Beyond washing the same stack of dishes or a heap of laundry, right? God made her a creator as well. Encourage that God-given creativity in her. Make sure you deliberately set aside some time for her to just go and do what she likes, to quilt or to paint or to garden, whatever she likes doing. Why not offer to do the supper dishes and watch the children so that she's not constantly interrupted when she's doing something like this? She doesn't always have to be working. You've come home from work. You don't work all the time. Why can't she spend some time expressing that creativity as well?
And when we go on vacation, and we've maybe been on the road for a little while, Brett can always tell when I'm finally able to relax and enjoy the trip because he'll notice and go, hey, you're not at work anymore.
He can just see it in her eyes. Yeah. Men, let your wife enjoy a time of relaxation with a hobby. More than just maybe some creativity, but an actual hobby. It's a refreshment for her spirit. She'll come back to her job, working at home, feeling renewed and energized. This may be even more important for women than men, because wives and mothers live at their job and rarely get to leave the office and go relax.
Ladies, support your husband's dreams. Again, your spouse's goals and/or dreams may not be things that you would choose for yourself. It doesn't matter. It's about standing behind them and saying, go ahead and take scuba diving classes. I'm not going to be joining you, but I want you to go and have fun. Now, I did give in and learn how to snorkel, but I didn't really enjoy it.
But she let me learn how to scuba.
Yeah.
Guys, learn to pick up on her subtle hints. Such as, oh, look, there's a quilt shop while you're driving. Sometimes she wants you to offer instead of just agree, right? So as I experienced, don't stomp on the gas. Ask me how I know. It may seem funny when you do it, but it could be very hurtful. It could be taken the wrong way.
Another important thing is to develop a vision of your future together. We spend a lot of time just sitting around talking about where we see ourselves in 5 or 10 years or even 20 years from now. We want to make sure we're both on the same page, so we map out plans for our retirement or how we're going to, you know, make sure we're financially secure or whatever. And then we also set short-term goals like fix-it projects and vacations and remodeling projects that turn out to be really expensive. But it's exciting to build dreams together, and then we work at it to make them come true. Sometimes the reality of it turns out very differently from what we envision, but at least we have something to aim for. And sometimes it's not possible to make long-range plans, depending where you're at, and that's okay. When our girls were young, we just tried to figure out where we'd be by next year.
Yeah, there's so much going on, yeah. Husbands, your wife craves your care and protection. Planning and completing those fix-it projects tells her that her and her home are important to you too. Repairing minor things around the house is a much more effective romantic gesture than a dozen roses. Again, ask me how I know. Don't undercut her security by acting financially irresponsible. Going into debt, buying foolish, expensive boy toys, especially without seeking her counsel first. Don't make her handle conflicts with others, such as billing problems or angry customers, etc. As the head of the home, you are the first line of defense between her and the rest of the world. You can be her hero.
Between your husband's responsibilities and obligations at work and at home, not to mention his duties at church, he can feel pulled in too many directions at once. And just the fact that he's likely the breadwinner, or at least the main one in your family, means that he carries a really heavy load every single day. So look for ways that you can make his life easier, and he'll thank you for it. I like to think that I can lighten Brett's burden just a little by making his life run as smoothly as possible. He's often expressed appreciation at finding clean clothes in the closet, or his prescriptions refilled, or appointment reminders jotted down for him. It doesn't take that much time out of my day to do these. They're small things, but they convey a lot of love and caring.
Till recently, I worked full-time outside the home. Now I get to work from home a lot more, but until recently it was full-time outside the home. Her job as wife is full-time inside the home. Sometimes she felt resentful when I came home at the end of the day and plopped down and stared at my cell phone or the computer and never connected with her. On the other hand, it can be a real blessing to your spouse when you take some of the load off their shoulders. On occasion, when she's had a really bad day, I'll announce that I'll clean up the kitchen after dinner. I'll draw her a hot bubble bath, complete with scented candles and a cold drink. She gets to escape from her office for a little while and relax.
And I try to remember that his job is usually more stressful than mine and has a lot more serious consequences if he doesn't get his to-do list done. I may be at work 24/7, but I make my own schedule, and my boss is very forgiving if I have an off day. Maybe you can do the same for your husband. Can you give him a few minutes of quiet time before the children tackle him when he gets in the door? Can you wait until after supper to tell him about the strange noise that the washing machine started making? The things around the house that need to be fixed can wait until he's had some time to unwind. And try giving him a 5-minute shoulder rub, and you may find that his mood improves considerably.
Men, recognize that your wife has unique talents that she brings to the relationship that you don't have. Assuming that just because you're the head means that you have better skills in every area is just breathtakingly arrogant. Your wife is a valuable resource. You have a partnership, so let her be a partner. Look for areas where your wife can find fulfillment by exercising her God-given gifts. Lori excels in record keeping, budgeting, organization, in addition to the usual skills of cooking and housekeeping.
Yeah, so an important piece of advice I have is make a budget if you don't have one. How can people fight about something they don't have? Yet many arguments between couples are over money. So sit down together and come up with a plan for your finances and stick to it. You can review it occasionally and tweak it if necessary, but don't make changes to it without consulting your spouse. Back in the early days of our marriage, there was only $5, literally $5 left at the end of the week after we did our budget. If we hadn't set money aside to pay the bills beforehand, I doubt they would have gotten paid. And don't take advantage of your husband's trust in you by spending money impulsively on things that should be a joint decision.
Husbands, don't leave your wife out of the financial part of your marriage just because you earn all the money. your team, even when there's only one income. Don't make her beg for money to go grocery shopping, or ask her to justify every purchase she made when she gets home. Show some trust in your wife's ability to stick to your agreed-upon budget, much less confidence in your ability to pick a nice, thrifty wife. It reflects on you poorly, I guess, if she's not that good. Keep her in the loop on your family finances. Someday, your wife may be a widow, and she needs to know the ins and outs of your bank accounts, how to pay bills, etc. A few years ago, my brother-in-law was in a coma. He had a heart attack, I guess it was, and was in a coma in the hospital for over a month. Lori's sister was thrown into a panic because she had no idea where he kept the checkbook or their ATM card. She didn't know how to pay any of the bills, and she was completely in the dark in the middle of this most stressful time in her life, how to pick up and run the family, run the budget. She really didn't need that extra frustration thrown in what was already probably one of the worst moments of her life. Set a limit on how much money can be spent without getting the other's approval. Recently, I wanted to buy some books, so I told Lori the amount that I wanted to spend and said, "Are you okay with that?" It's just common courtesy. And it can prevent some nasty arguments later if you don't do that. If she's not okay with it, stop. Find out why, because wives tend to be a lot more sensitive to stupid guy decisions than their husbands are. God gave her to you for a reason. Let her be that helpmeet that God created her to be.
Pray for each other. This is really important because no one is a better prayer warrior for your husband or wife than you. Sometimes I pray for Brett when I'm ironing his shirts. I focus on different areas of his life as I'm going through the shirts. Like I pray for him as a father, as a husband, as a Sunday school teacher. And I like to think that it blesses both of us and it makes the job go faster.
Guys, she's not your slave. She's been placed into your care for you to nurture and to serve. That's the definition of love. Pick your clothes up and put them in the hamper. Bring the groceries in from the car for her after she comes back from shopping. Notice the things she does around the home. Meals, laundry, cleaning, things that just magically appear. Thank her for doing them. Truly thank her for doing them. She will appreciate your thanks for those endless and monotonous tasks.
Ladies, when was the last time that you sincerely thanked your husband for providing for your family? He works long hours in order to make sure that you have a roof over your head and food on the table and clothes to wear and a car to drive and maybe some extra things that just make life nice. And you can try to remember to thank him for the little things too, like killing that snake in the garden or checking out the strange noise in the middle of the night.
To be perfectly honest, you might as well accept the fact that you're not always going to adore your spouse. Maybe something happened at work that day that put you in a not-so-jolly mood. Or maybe traffic was horrendous, and now you have a pounding headache. Or maybe she's struggling with a hormonal issue. Best not to point that one out, guys. Just, again, ask me how I know. Some days, everything that she says may just rub you the wrong way. It's not the end of your marriage. It's just a bad day. Bite your tongue. Be kind, and remember that tomorrow will be better. Grumpiness is not the same thing as an argument. It's just a basic irritation with the whole world. Find a quiet place to be alone until you feel like a rational human being again. Spend some time in prayer, asking the Lord to adjust your attitude.
But sometimes things do get a little more serious than that, and you have things you need to work through. So practice what I call fair fighting. You're not going to get along perfectly all the time. And if you do, somebody might be hiding some resentment. If the cost of peace means quietly giving in every time you have a difference, your relationship is going to suffer. There's nothing wrong with having an argument, but do it in love. Choose a time when you can both sit down uninterrupted and state your complaint calmly, avoiding these words, "you never" or "you always." Your spouse should listen to what you're saying, and then repeat back to you what they thought they heard you say. Then you tell them if that's what you actually meant. Once you agree on what the crux of the argument is, you can work on a solution that you can both live with. Don't forget to give an apology if you need to. If you can, try to hold hands and look each other in the eye during this process. And then when it's all over, check with your spouse to see if they think the problem has been solved. If not, keep talking. But when the argument's over, it's over. Don't save it to use for later ammunition.
Lori does have a real advantage with me in that department. I don't have a very good memory in comparison. Ask me how I know. But remember that as a married couple, having an argument doesn't mean that you're enemies. You just have something to work through. Never respond with hurtful words. They may be forgiven, but that wound will remain in her heart for years. Sometimes disagreements can come about when you're with your children. Never undercut each other in front of them. Children need to respect both father and mother, and it destroys their sense of security to hear their parents insult or berate each other. Even though older children may be able to understand that their parents can disagree sometimes, and maybe even witness their parents resolve those disagreements calmly, it can still be very unsettling to them. Keep your fights private. Also, don't undermine each other's authority over the children, especially in front of them. If you can agree on a solution in a matter involving one of them, it's better to talk it out in private. Come to an agreement, and then maintain a united front when delivering the verdict to the child. It's okay to say, "Mom and Dad need some time to talk this over, and we'll get back to you." Some children do seem to have a talent for finding the parent that will side with them and then turn the other parent against them.
Put your spouse before your children. I think that mothers have a harder time with this than fathers because it's in a woman's nature to nurture her children and make their wants and needs a high priority. But it's a mistake when it means placing the needs of the children above those of your husband. Your spouse is your lifelong partner and deserves to be first in your affections and in your attention. When your children see how much mom and dad love each other, they feel secure, and they'll have a great example on which to model their own marriages. Another benefit to this is that when your children are grown and gone, you won't be left with a stranger in the house.
Don't fail to show affection to your wife in front of the children. Use terms of endearment, honey, sweetheart, or cutie pie. Children gain a sense of security when they see their parents being affectionate with each other.
Wives need to feel loved, cherished, and cared for before being receptive to physical intimacy. If a woman feels like she's been ignored all day, or she's just plain exhausted, physical closeness can feel like just another chore on her to-do list instead of a gift.
In contrast, husbands desire physical intimacy in order to feel loved, cherished, and cared for. Rejection is easily seen as a withholding of love. A weary and unfulfilled wife, plus a needy husband, can equal a vicious cycle of unmet desires, resentment, and hurt feelings.
When your spouse acts out of character, always give them the benefit of the doubt. Always believe the best about your spouse until proven otherwise. No one likes to have their motives and actions questioned. It's hurtful, especially when it's coming from the one person whose opinion should matter the most.
Never mock or belittle your wife, especially in front of others. Yes, you can have a sense of humor with each other, but remember that teasing can hurt. Causing embarrassment to your spouse is a surefire way to damage your relationship. I remember a recent event where I said something in public that was so monumentally stupid that it could have easily been taken as an insult.
And I did.
There was hurt and a time of apologies. Men, don't be afraid to apologize for wrongs you've done, even unintended ones. Lori said that a lifetime of me not being hurtful with her helped her to realize that my oafish comment was not made with malicious intent. That being said, a good sense of humor smooths over some of the rough spots in a relationship. Sometimes you just have to laugh at yourself in the situation. This is much different than laughing at your spouse. Laugh with them. Be able to step back and see the humor of the situation can go a long way to diffusing the tension. There's been a few times when Lori and I have been in the middle of a tense discussion, and we suddenly just burst out laughing, realizing the silliness of what we were doing. And that sense of humor paid off there.
Be your spouse's biggest cheerleader. When they feel like they're a failure, be the one in their corner that's encouraging them on. We all need to feel like someone is behind us, urging us to do and be our best.
As newlyweds, we were still quite poor. I dropped out of college, which was a heartbreaking loss of a lifetime goal for me. Lori didn't want me to give up on my dream, so she proposed we scrape together a little bit of money so I could take a night class. That began a six-year marathon of night school in order to graduate. She spent many a lonely evening while I was in class, and many, many more lonely hours while I was occupied studying when I got home. She made it financially possible by supplementing my income by babysitting two toddlers, in addition to our own two-year-old at the time. She was my biggest cheerleader.
Ladies, remember that you're the general manager of your home, and you should maintain a standard of cleanliness and order in your housekeeping. When your husband walks in the door at the end of the day, don't make him wonder what you've been doing all day. A relatively neat house and some evidence of supper being prepared, tell him that you're part of the team. And if supper is running a little bit behind, just quickly set the table and it'll buy you a few minutes.
Remember, guys, she lives at her job. Don't make your homecoming be the most stressful part of her day. Don't criticize her if the house isn't perfectly picked up or supper isn't on the table yet. She may have had a very hectic or frustrating day. Say, hello, beautiful. Give her a hug and offer to help.
Agree to disagree when it's not earth-shattering. Sometimes you're just not going to see eye to eye on things, and it's not even always necessary. You can each have a different opinion and still live peaceably. It's okay to know in your heart that he's wrong and still keep your mouth shut at the same time.
Don't forget to court her. Pursue her just like when you were dating. As your marriage matures, it's easy to forget to do all of the special things you used to do to win her heart and to show her your love. One way to keep that alive is through deliberate acts of service. Some of them can be spontaneous, like a non-scheduled dinner out, random bouquet of flowers, or a whispered compliment in her ear. But more meaningful, I think, are the habitual kindnesses, ones that you do all the time, just to show them that you still adore them.
These can be as simple as a chore that you always do together, just so you can enjoy being in each other's company. For us, we nearly always make the bed together in the morning. It just starts a day off right, having accomplished something together as a team before we even open the bedroom door. And whenever Brett's home, he brings me coffee first thing in the morning before we even make the bed. Even when we're staying in a hotel, or like this morning, he'll go down to the lobby and bring coffee back for me. It's not that I'm incapable of getting my own coffee, it's his way of serving me and making me feel loved.
Another coffee tradition that I love is that Lori makes little fancy latte-style coffees for us each afternoon. We have our coffee sitting on the swing under the big oak in our front yard. In the cold weather, I guess we do it snuggling up in front of the fireplace. We talk, we make plans, and most importantly, we connect. No cell phones allowed. Coffee time is an important ritual, and we never miss it if at all possible.
Another habit that we've gotten into is that Brett tucks me into bed each night. So when it's time to turn out the lights, he comes around to my side of the bed, he pulls the covers up to my chin, and kisses me goodnight. And it really has become the best way to end the day and fall asleep.
The saying is true that the best marriages are one where each person believes they got the better end of the deal. If both of you are convinced that you got the better spouse, it'll go a long ways towards making your marriage the thing of beauty that God intended it to be. And lastly, the next time you're not seeing eye to eye with your partner, make sure that you're not following the example of the blind men who couldn't see the whole elephant and only argued about who was right. There just may be a different perspective that you haven't discovered yet. Talking about perspectives, recall that our story about the blind men had six blind men. So far, you've only heard the two of us share what we've discovered.